Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Are you pregnant, thinking about becoming pregnant, or trying to become pregnant and dealing with anxiety? Or did you experience anxiety in pregnancy? Perhaps it was anxiety due to the physical symptoms, or because you arrived at pregnancy after experiencing huge reproductive trauma with lots of worry around conception or fertility, or because for whatever reason, the hormones in pregnancy just drove you into fight or flight mode. Maybe because we're told it's supposed to be the happiest time in our life, you thought you would feel amazing and excited and at ease, and instead you were incredibly on edge, which is so normal and just not widely discussed. This episode where we explore perinatal anxiety is for you. I am joined by Michelle Flynn, perinatal psychotherapist and founder of Oncrib Yoke Psychotherapy. I will include the link to her site in the show notes. Michelle has a wonderful, gentle way about her and about exploring this topic, and I hope that it's both comforting and useful and, of course, validating for anyone either going through this right now or if you have gone through this in the past. Thank you so much for listening and take care. Michelle, thank you so much for joining me on Owning It, the Anxiety Podcast. It's a pleasure to have an expert such as yourself here. And I think this is going to be a very necessary conversation today. Thanks for being here.
Thanks so much, Caroline. It's a pleasure.
I'm delighted that you reached out to me, because what you brought to me was a topic that is really necessary and something that I haven't really delved into. So you are a perinatal psychotherapist.
Yeah, that's right, Karen. A perinatal psychotherapist. My core training is in humanistic and integrative psychotherapy. And I have mainly worked sort of in the area of trauma. And then sort of following my own experience of mood and anxiety disorders during pregnancy and postnatally, I then did additional training in perinatal mental health and also in infant mental health. And I now kind of specialize in supporting mums and dads and infants, from conception right through pregnancy, birth, and up to a year is kind of what defines perinatal mental health.
In the podcast before, I've shared a lot about my own experience postnatally, my postnatal anxiety, bit of postnatal depression as a result of being so anxious after birth. But what I would really love to focus on here, which is something that I haven't delved into, is the kind of beforehand, so the anti part, the peri part. And I think there's a lot of confusion there, because I know when I asked on Instagram for people to tell me if they've experienced perinatal, everyone was talking very much about after giving birth. So let's just clarify that to begin with. What do we mean when we talk about perinatal or antenatal?
Yeah, so I think so the term perinatal, I think really to be clear about that, what that covers is it kind of covers any time from, like I said, it's from conception and right through pregnancy and then 1 year postnatal. So it's that whole period really around reproduction, you know, and it can actually even begin, you know, for those who are on their own fertility journey, you know, IVF, trying to get pregnant, you know, can happen kind of as early as that. And so, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, reproductive trauma and what that means. And really that's about kind of any kind of trauma that can happen, you know, at any stage of the reproductive journey. And it can happen for, I mean, we focus a lot on maternal mental health, but it can also affect dads. And there's a growing body of research now to really understand that there's an impact also on dad's mental health during this time. So when we talk about postnatal anxiety, really what we're talking about is after the baby is born, but we know that anxiety can happen anytime during pregnancy, and it kind of tends to peak around the end of the second trimester and kind of the start of the third trimester. That's when we see it kind of most often. But for me, you know, my own personal experience, it kind of happened really from the moment I found out that I was pregnant. So it can happen at any stage.
I have friends who experienced a lot of prenatal depression, and for them it was very unexpected because they were so happy about being pregnant, and you know, they had planned it, and it seemed from what they told me to be very much a physiological thing, that there, whatever was going on hormonally, they just were at a very low ebb for the duration of their pregnancy, and then for them it lifted when they had the baby. So do you see links between the sort of prenatal, perinatal anxiety and depression?
Yeah, I mean, it's, so I suppose just to clarify, so they are, I mean, there is a lot of linkages between anxiety and depression during the perinatal period. They can often go hand in hand, but they don't necessarily have to. So, you know, many of the women that I work with might be experiencing anxiety, but not necessarily feeling depressed or having that very low mood, the lack of motivation, you know, the constant crying, the tearfulness, you know, that's not necessarily a component of it. What is a little bit more prevalent, though, is that, you know, birthing people or women who are experiencing postnatal depression do tend to be more anxious. And I guess that's a result of the low mood and the impact of that. But the two things, I mean, they can occur together, but they don't necessarily have to occur together or overlap. And, you know, I think what we need to consider here is that during pregnancy, there's a huge change in our hormone levels. You know, there's increased estrogen, progesterone, and all of that can kind of, you know, wreak havoc on our nervous system and on our mood. There's doubling in our blood volume. There's so many physiological changes that happen that can impact our mood. And sometimes when, you know, after the birth and there's that kind of drop in those hormones, sometimes that can lift. And then for other women, the drop in hormones can actually be kind of what triggers the changes in the mood. So I guess it's, you know, it's very different for everybody. And also there's a number of predisposing factors as well that are going to have an impact. So things like, you know, whether or not you've had a mood and anxiety disorder prior to becoming pregnancy, like depression, anxiety, bipolar disorder, OCD, and any of those, you know, that's going to be something to be mindful of, and that can be a predisposing factor. And there can also be things like, you know, social factors. You know, like we know during the pandemic, there was a huge rise in the number of women presenting with perinatal mood and anxiety disorders. There's going to be things like, you know, whether or not you've had reproductive trauma in the past. So, for example, have you had loss? You know, have you gone through the IVF journey? Have you had a baby maybe in the ICU or, you know, in NICU? You know, all of these things are going to have a huge impact on how you feel during pregnancy.
It seems like there's a lot of different variables, and I think it might be helpful for listeners if we can tease apart a little bit and maybe start with understanding, just say someone who is not presenting with, you know, coming to the table with existing trauma, whether it was, you know, IVF, or they're maybe not a naturally anxious person, you know, or a person who tends towards worry. And let's just focus on what happens from a physiological level then, because I think that can really surprise people. They feel like they should be able to think their way out of it, because it's, you know, who they are as a person. But then, like you say, there's so much going on physically. Is it most common that people experience this kind of anxiety because of such a huge change in their body physically? Or is it more common that it's really hard to phrase this, because I feel like, you know, if you told someone they were pregnant and they're about to have a baby and they actually weren't pregnant, they would go through all the anxiety of, will the baby be okay? Will I be okay? You know, what if this happens? I hope we carry through to live birth. That all that anxiety would be there from a cognitive perspective, okay? But then you add in the actual physiological, what's happening in the body, and that is something you can't think your way out of necessarily. In my own experience of anxiety in general, knowing why you're anxious, knowing, okay, well, yeah, this makes sense, I'm worried about, you know, this is something that matters a lot to me. If your body is pumping stress hormones and really low on, for whatever reason, you know, the happy hormones, it's going to affect you. I'm not explaining this very well, but I'm trying to tease apart the cognitive from the physiological, I suppose.
Yeah, no, I get you, Caroline. I mean, I think what I'm kind of hearing you saying is that, you know, like, anxiety is a normal part of, you know, becoming pregnant. You know, the minute you find out you have, you weigh in that stick and you get the positive result. I mean, anxiety is a normal part, and anxiety is not the enemy. Anxiety is not necessarily a bad thing. You know, we need to have an increase in kind of awareness and hypervigilance. You know, that's what gets us to our antenatal appointments. That's what, you know, helps us eat the right food during pregnancy to get the sleep that we need. There has to be a kind of a level of anxiety and a level of cautiousness, you know, that's totally appropriate. And I think it's, you know, it only becomes problematic when that anxiety is impacting on your day to day, when it's excessive, you know. And what that looks like then is like what you're talking about. There's the cognitive part of that. There's the racing thoughts. There's that really feeling of dread that something terrible is going to happen. You know, it's irritability, it's, you know, changes in sleep, changes in, you know, in appetite, you know, it's the physical sensations of that, which is the dizziness, the hot flushes, the heart palpitations, you know. So it's like when it kind of becomes next level and unmanageable and debilitating, you know, that's when we would say things are starting to deteriorate and when maybe more help is needed. But I guess, like, in terms of the what you're talking about, what happens kind of on a physiological level, I think it's, you know, the dip in hormones or the increase in hormones, depending on whether you're pre or postnatal, and you know, that is going to have an overall effect on our mood. And I think some people, you know, and then we bring in thyroid issues and all of that, some people are going to respond differently to that. But I think a big part of it is actually, you know, what's happening externally and in the external world for that person. So like I said, things like lack of support, you know, previous trauma, financial situation, all of those things externally are going to have a big impact on that person's experience.
I'm kind of starting to see there's like a few different verticals or spokes on a wheel that can come together, and maybe one of them will apply to you and maybe two of them will apply to you. Like, the maybe your physiological makeup will be the driver of anxiety for you because that's just the way your body functions, or maybe for you it will be because you're coming to it with a past trauma, or maybe it's the pressures of the external pressures of, well, this is supposed to be the happiest time in your life, and well, this is what you wanted. Are you not the happiest you've ever been? Are you not, you know, why are you so worried? Why do you feel anxious? Why do you feel down when this is what you've wanted? And, you know, all of that can just exacerbate more anxiety. And I think, I suppose, a good place to start is to allow people and allow women and give them the permission to go into this knowing that it's okay to feel anxious throughout it. It doesn't have to detract from your joy or excitement or happiness, or it doesn't have to negate it. But we really do in society respond to pregnancy as though it is, can only be a really happy, positive thing. And then for someone then to feel anything other than that, it can be really jarring. And then they can start to blame themselves. And then that kind of perpetuates more anxiety. So I think the maybe where we have power in this conversation is to work on the wider conversation part around pregnancy. And even, I mean, while I want to focus on before the baby comes in this episode, for me, when it was, you know, very much after the baby came and everyone was like, oh my God, is this the happiest you've ever been? And I was like, no, mm-hmm. I am out of my mind with stress, with anxiety. I felt like, what is wrong with me? What kind of monster am I? Am mm-hmm. I broken? Mm-hmm. And I know for my friends who were almost ashamed to say, well, one friend in particular who struggled so much with depression in her pregnancy, who had never experienced depression before, she'd never even told anyone because she was so worried of how she would come across to the rest of the world when, and then you start to think of, oh my God, all these people who would do anything to be pregnant. And here mm-hmm. I am pregnant and I feel depressed. Mm-hmm. That is so much pressure. Mm-hmm. So the society element, the how we should be feeling, how we should be thinking, what it should look like, would you say is one of the biggest drivers?
Yeah, absolutely, Caroline. And I think you actually pointed out some really important bits there. Firstly, I just want to go back, track a little bit to what you were saying earlier, that, you know, that there is, you know, some people do have a more anxious personality type. You know, they might have a disposition to being kind of that kind of worrier, you know, the more, and, you know, that definitely plays a role in it. And you also touched on, you know, trauma. You know, we know that people who have experienced trauma, and whether that's the big kind of significant big T traumas, as we call them, or even the smaller little T traumas, you know, the relational traumas. And that could be something like, you know, even as far back as kind of their own parents' reproductive story. You know, maybe you had a parent who went through loss or miscarriage, and all of that gets kind of re-triggered again, you know, during pregnancy, during that time. So I suppose there, just to go back to that point, there is a number of factors that play into whether somebody is going to be at increased risk of experiencing a perinatal mood and anxiety disorder or not. And then the other bit that you talked about there, I think is really, really important, is absolutely, I think there is so much pressure now on women, on families, on dads, about how you should feel after you have a baby.
Or when you're expecting the baby.
Or when you're expecting a baby, absolutely, that, you know, that you should be overjoyed, that this is a blessing, and you kind of that, you know, it's really that kind of minimizing and that toxic positivity a lot that we see. And I think that that does bring a lot of shame then, and it does interfere, I think, with women being able to say, look, actually, this doesn't feel good. I feel like crap. I'm worried out of my mind. I'm terrified. You know, this feels too much, because they're afraid to say it. They're afraid that there's going to be a backlash, that they're not grateful or appreciative, or, you know, isn't this what you wanted? And I think, you know, often what I see a lot in my work is often, you know, parents that have gone through the IVF journey, you know, that they've had fertility struggles or, you know, baby loss, and then, you know, they're pregnant again and they're absolutely racked with fear. And that makes sense. That makes complete sense given what they've gone through. And what they're hearing is, you know, but isn't this great now? You've got what you wanted. You know, you're pregnant. And that can be so invalidating for somebody who is in complete internal turmoil and worried out of their mind, you know, not to be able to say, no, actually, this is how I'm feeling. And, you know, Caroline, you know, from your work, you know, one of the quickest ways to tame anxiety, to get it under control, is to name it, to validate it, to give it space. And I think often women are not given that permission. They're not allowed to name it. And that's a problem. It's a really big problem.
I have a friend who went through, like so many women do, exactly what you've described there, where she'd gone through a loss and she got pregnant via IVF. And a lot of people who weren't talking to her every day were saying things like, oh, that's great now. You don't have to worry now. Well, why are you still worrying about it? Like, you're pregnant now. And she was like rattling with anxiety from the moment she got that positive result, right up until she gave birth and after, of course. And what I assumed would happen was that the longer she was pregnant and the more confirmation that things were going well and looking okay, the more the anxiety would settle for her. And actually the opposite happened, because the more she went into it, the more real it became, the more for her, in her mind, the higher the stakes went, because now she was seeing an, you know, a baby on a scan. She was hearing a heartbeat. Now it was something really tangible, and it got, you know, she knew it was a girl, or she knew it was, she started to be able to put names in her head and clothes and plan the room. And even though it was becoming more and more likely that this would all go really well, her anxiety was driving higher and higher, because she got more increasingly frightened of losing what now felt so real to her. And I'm not saying that it's not real when it's in those first few days and weeks, but it was just it was a learning curve for me to see her anxiety go through the roof when I thought it would settle for her. And it really peaked after the baby was here. And I think what can happen for so many women is they're holding their breath until the baby is there. And then when the baby comes, some little space might open up where all of the anxiety and worry from all of the, whether, you know, for someone who's been trying and going through issues, comes rushing to the surface. At the time that's in quotation marks supposed to be the happiest time in your life, suddenly you're trying to process all of that grief and loss, and the juxtaposition of grief at a time when you feel joy, and then you're wrecked and exhausted. And but for me, because she's my best friend, you know, we had so many conversations throughout her pregnancy where I was, you know, learning about what is actually helpful to say and what isn't. And I really, you know, because I hadn't been through it myself, I was like putting my hands up saying, I want to support you, but, you know, I need you to tell me what is helpful or not. And I learned a lot about things like, oh, well, you're pregnant now, so it's okay. Like, what are you still worried about? Like, you know, your fertility journey has, your difficulty has ended now, so that's, let's just box that off. No, it's not something you ever let go of. And I, from people that I've known, there's no anxiety in the pregnancy phase like the anxiety of coming to it with having already had loss and being high risk and having tried for so long, because you almost can't let yourself feel excited or joy. Just, it's like a protective mechanism. And I think there definitely needs to be a conversation around when someone does get, if they do get pregnant, not it not being a case of, okay, let's pop the champagne now, because they're not necessarily, my friend didn't really want to do a baby shower. She didn't want to allow herself to start celebrating because she was terrified out of her mind. And I think that's so commonly experienced, yet it's people who maybe haven't gone through it, myself included, could be so quick to be like, okay, we can relax now, you're pregnant and it's all looking good and all signs are pointing towards everything working out here. And they're still reeling with anxiety the whole way through and afterwards. Where can things change? What supports are needed there? What supports are lacking there for that person who's gone through all that reproductive trauma, like you say?
Yeah, because I think, you know, I think you've hit the nail on the head there. It's like that person is in survival mode. You know, that, okay, logically, they might know that the threat is gone. You know, they're pregnant now, things are pointing in the right direction. But, you know, their body doesn't know that. Physiologically, they are still in fight, flight, freeze. You know, they're still in their sympathetic responses to that situation. They don't know yet that they're safe. Their body doesn't know yet that they are safe. You know, so, you know, to your question, it's like, you know, I think it's about, I think we definitely need increased awareness around reproductive trauma. I think it's something that's not talked about. I think it's something that's not known. I think the narrative around motherhood and getting pregnant is all around kind of, you know, be positive. You know, I also run some infant massage groups, and you know, I even, you know, as I was doing that training, there's a real sense of, you know, let's just tell the mothers about the good things. Let's keep it positive. And obviously that is really important, but we need to also, you know, help people to understand that pregnancy, that the fertility journey, it isn't always straightforward. You know, there is times when It can be hard, it can be difficult, it can be traumatic. And I think if you find yourself in that place where you are absolutely petrified, where you have gone through reproductive trauma, you know, it can feel incredibly lonely because the expectation is, okay, I should feel a certain way and I don't, I'm actually petrified. So I think the more awareness that we have around that, I think is going to make a really big difference. Was there another part to that question, Caroline?
Not really. It was more just another very long-winded thought around acknowledging the anxiety that can stay there the whole way through. And I almost feel like with my friend, we kind of said, let's stop trying to get you to a point where you don't feel anxious in pregnancy, because that's maybe too unreachable for you right now. Maybe just say, this, of course you're feeling anxious because of what you've been through. This matters so much to you. Your body is trying so hard to protect you from something that to a large extent is kind of out of your hand. You're leaving it up to nature. You're doing everything you can, but just maybe reframe the anxiety as being something that you can have beside you the whole way through, and all at once is the best for you. It's not out to get you. And I think in all conversations about anxiety, that's really helpful. But you don't have to get to a point in pregnancy, whether you're coming at it from a place of having experienced trauma or because we think pregnancy should be a joyous time. You know, sometimes it's really freeing to be like, I don't have to love this. I can't just be in survival mode through pregnancy. I don't have to subscribe to what the rest of the world tells me it should look like or be like. I don't have to look back on this fondly in years to come. I don't have to have a photo shoot with my bump in the daisies in a meadow. I mean, there's very few people I know who loved pregnancy or felt really at ease. And for some people, and it's amazing, for some people, it's the best they've ever felt. Their stress hormones just dissolve and mm-hmm. they feel so at ease. But that's probably, would you say, more the minority?
Yeah, no, I think it's definitely more common than we know. You know, I mean, we know that kind of 6% of pregnant women and 10% of postpartum women experience anxiety. Okay, so this is, you know,
only
this
6. Is
during pregnancy, but that's what we know of. But remember, the research is still quite young on this. I mean, I think even if you check the HSE website and you put in perinatal mood and anxiety disorders, you'll get postnatal depression. Yeah. You know, so it's still kind of in its infancy in terms of kind of what we know about this. Okay, so but I think you're right. I think, I mean, and I suppose just to be really clear, you know, anxiety is a very common part of the reproductive journey, you know, but you know, just to go back to your point that, you know, when it is debilitating, when it is causing an impact on your well-being and on your baby's well-being, you know, it is treatable. You know, there is a lot of different treatment options available. So while, yes, absolutely, you know, a lot of women go through pregnancy in survival mode and just holding their breath and hoping for the best. But at the same time, you know, there is kind of that what we call, I mean, you hear a lot, oh, you know, it's, of course, you're going to be nervous when you have a new baby. Of course, things are going to feel too much. Of course, you're going to be overwhelmed and not sleeping and all of those things. But at the same time, while it is really, really common to feel anxious, it's also not normal to be having intrusive thoughts or constant worry or, you know, not able to do the day-to-day things that you would normally do, you know, or having an impact on your mood that kind of stops you getting out of bed in the morning or doing the things that you want to do, you know. So I suppose just to say that it is treatable, you know, and there is so many different options out there. So I think the first thing really for people is acknowledging it. But I think you're right, Caroline, to say, you know, it's like, we don't need to rush anybody out of anxiety, you know, that we can't think our way into feeling better, because this is at a physiological level that, you know, that your friend, that this person is experiencing this kind of emotion and they are in survival mode, you know, that they can see danger and feel danger everywhere. And it's almost like, you know, I think it's just being there and validating that for them and checking in what they might need from you in that moment.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. so you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
I think as well, you know, we have to kind of talk about if someone does acknowledge, okay, I'm at the point where I realize that it's, okay, yes, anxiety is part of it, but this is maybe a bit excessive. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned mm-hmm. intrusive thoughts, or I'm not functioning, I'm not getting through the day, or I'm finding myself down major rabbit holes of mm-hmm. threads mm-hmm. and forums online, reading mm-hmm. more confirmation bias of how things can go terribly wrong, and I'm spiraling. And apart from talking to a friend, and the friend might not be well equipped to, I mean, obviously, you know, your closest friends want nothing but the best for you, but if they haven't been through it, they might not get it. Well, where can someone turn to if they're at that point of realizing they need some help? Because we say, oh, there's not enough supports out there. You're saying there's many things that you can do. Where should someone go?
Yeah, so there's a number of different treatment options. And I would always say kind of the first stop, you know, if you're feeling that way, is to talk to your health provider, you know. So talk to the hospital, talk to the midwives, talk to your GP, let them know. And that can be really hard to do. That can be easier said than done, you know, for all the reasons that we've explained about, you know, the shame, the stigma, which is still very much there, that kind of, and there's a loss there that comes with admitting, you know, that this isn't that magical experience that I expected this to be. I don't feel the way I hoped. So there's loss there as well, you know, that can be hard to get your head around. But I would say the first thing is, you know, is to talk to somebody about it, talk to a healthcare provider about it.
Because they all have a team or a unit dedicated to this that maybe we don't realize is there.
Absolutely, absolutely. They do. And I mean, some of the, you know, some countries are better than others in terms of being, you know, people being able to actually access those supports. And obviously then, you know, some people are going to be more an advantage if they can kind of pay privately for that kind of support as well. But I would always say, yeah, the first stop is go to your primary care. And don't, you know, and what I would always say as well is, you know, it might be that you're not heard the first time, you know. So really this takes advocating for yourself. And if you feel you can't do that on your own, you know, bringing a partner or bring a friend or somebody with you that can help say, look, something is not right, you know. And it's like, this is your experience. So no matter what, you know, if you're not feeling right, you're not feeling right, you know. So being really able to name that and advocate yourself is so important. And that can be really, really hard. And then, you know, there's lots of different options. I mean, there is talking therapy, which we know makes a huge impact. There's the likes of cognitive behavioral therapy, particularly if you are having that kind of, you know, postpartum panic disorder, where you're having kind of those constant panic attacks. And that just, you know, that's the heart palpitations, not feeling like you're going to pass out, you know, the tingling in the fingers and toes, the numbness, the dizziness, you know, that's, you know, this is a good example of saying, yes, it's okay to be anxious during pregnancy, but if you're having repeated panic attacks during pregnancy, you know, that's not okay. That's when you need to be really reaching out. And, you know, having these kind of debilitating and constant intrusive thoughts, you know, this, and that can be images, that can be sounds, that can be anything at all, really, that this kind of, that they're anxious in nature, you know, and they're repetitive, and they're, you know, they're really upsetting, nobody should have to be living with that all the time. So something like cognitive behavioral therapy is really, really good for intrusive thoughts, and also for, you know, if it is a little bit more on the OCD side, when we're having kind of the obsession, which is the intrusive thought or the repetitive image, followed by a compulsion, which is, you know, doing a certain ritual or behavior over and over again to kind of to curb the fear, you know. So that's when you really, and that's, so that's the talking therapies, you know, for something like where it's more on kind of the trauma side, something like EMDR can be a really effective treatment as well. And then, you know, I'm not a psychiatrist, but there are, you know, so I don't want to talk too much about the medications that are available for the perinatal period, but, you know, it might be that that medication is also needed and is can be really useful. So, you know, what I would say is perinatal mood and anxiety disorders, they're temporary and they're treatable, you know. So I just really would encourage anybody who is in any way worried about, you know, themselves or their partner or a friend, you know, to get the help that they need, because they deserve it. Yeah. They really, really do.
Even when it comes to the physical stuff for me, you know, I was so ill in my pregnancy, like vomiting every day. But I apparently wasn't excessive enough to be diagnosed. You know, I remember being like, feeling that, oh, well, this is just part of it. You have to just deal with it and suffer. And I was so ill and I was crying every day because I was like, I feel so bad. I don't even know how I can stand up. And it was like, I remember when I went to my consultant and I was like, I've been feeling so bad. And I was up all night with reflux. And he was like, Caroline, you know, there's things we can give you for this. You don't have to be a martyr and suffer just because, oh, well, aren't you so fortunate to be pregnant? You should be like completely strung out, miserable with symptoms this whole time. There are things we can do. You don't have to, there are options out there. You don't have to suffer in silence, whether it's emotional or physical or whatever. And for me, I didn't think I was allowed to, you know, when I got medication for the sickness or when I took stuff for the reflux and I felt better, I was like, oh my God, like I didn't know that I could do this. And it sounds so weird to say that, but I thought I had to just kind of just get on with it, because that's just so what we're told about pregnancy, just get on with it. It's not a sickness. You're just pregnant. Get on with it. Another thing we haven't really touched on is the anxiety in that pregnancy stage that can come about as a result of like feeling physically woeful. And for me, when I think about my perinatal versus postnatal experience, I always describe the anxiety as really only hitting me almost 24 hours after my baby was born, like a freight train, because I thought that by the time I had the baby, that was the finish line, because I was so sick and so physically just miserable in pregnancy. But so much of the anxiety I felt in pregnancy was not about, like, I almost didn't have time. There was no space in my mind to worry about what could go wrong with the baby, or because I was just trying to get through the day with the physical symptoms. I was on crutches for pelvic girdle pain. I was vomiting all the time. I was in such survivor mode that there was no room for rumination. I couldn't catastrophize because I was just in it. And for a lot of people, I mean, I have done other episodes just on dealing with, you know, the getting sick element, which is a whole phobia that people have. So sometimes the anxiety can come about as a result of, you know, if you're being worn down by physical symptoms, which can come with pregnancy, that's going to have an effect on your mood, obviously. Like, no one is in good form when they have a vomiting bug. You can't be expected to be in good form when you're throwing up every day. And then there's that pressure of, oh, well, it's just sickness because of pregnancy. I should still be getting up and going into work and being fine and getting on with it. So is that something you see a lot of as well, then, like anxiety and depression as a result of just feeling so physically crap?
Yeah, absolutely. And our bodies go through so much when we are pregnant. And I think, you know, what you talked about there, you know, that's so hard on your body to be vomiting all the time. And that can, for some people, and I think you've talked about this before, Caroline, in terms of kind of your own fear around vomiting. I mean, that can in and of itself put you into fight or flight mode. You know, that can, your nervous system can think that you are in danger when you are constantly feeling sick, when you're nauseous, when you're vomiting, you know, when you're sleep deprived. You know, sleep is, when we know, one of the biggest catalysts for anxiety or lack of sleep, you know. So straight away then you're in your threat response, you know, you're in the survival mode, and that's going to just elevate your anxiety. So Absolutely, I think, and physical pain can be so difficult because there is that narrative around, well, you know, you're pregnant, these things happen, you know, get on with it. And kind of even that lack of validation around your experience can kind of pique the anxiety. So yeah, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised that you were feeling run down, you know, that you'd kind of you were in survival mode, Caroline.
I think there needs to be more awareness of, you know, all this what to expect when you're expecting is so much about today it's the size of an orange and today you might have ligament pain. And there's very little in my experience around in the traditional supports that are there or the systems that are there to help guide you through pregnancy and beyond about what to expect emotionally. And it's almost a fear of even saying, like, I remember when I was on my day two in the hospital and nurses were coming in and they were like, now has anyone told you that you might feel a bit out of sorts tonight? And I was like, no, what's happening tonight? And it was the whole, you know, the day three or something, the second night syndrome, they call it.
Yeah,
I was like, no. And I felt like so, I know I felt so much worse because I went in thinking I'm supposed to be in 100% bliss mode here and pregnancy, I'm supposed to just be beaming from ear to ear. There's not enough literature or information around the emotional side that is not so pretty as part of, you know, growing your family. It's so much focus on the physical, like how to bathe the baby. I'm like, okay, I can well YouTube that when the time comes. I'd rather know that for me to be like having a panic attack after, you know, is that just because my body is just processing all the hormones that have just left my body or what? Like, I was being in the dark about that makes it 10 times worse. I'm thinking, oh my God, am I on my own in this? Whether it's before pregnancy or during pregnancy or after pregnancy. So I don't know what power we have there in this conversation, but hopefully just to normalize a lot of it would be good. So I went to Instagram and I wanted to get a sense on people's experience. And I asked them, had they experienced anxiety or depression in that prenatal phase? So, you know, conception up to giving birth. 62% people said yes.
Okay.
Does that surprise you?
No, it really doesn't surprise me at all, Caroline. But I guess I'm really, you know, I'm really glad to see that people are able to name that for themselves and to acknowledge that they went through that and that something wasn't right.
I have so many, I asked people to just share their, a little bit about what, you know, what they went through. So I'll just maybe run through a few of them and we can comment on them if it feels necessary. But this is, I suppose, just more to let listeners know that this is what some people have experienced and they're not alone in what they feel. Yeah, someone just saying, I was pregnant after parental loss as well as miscarriages. It was really tough and there was very little supports. And that's a whole other layer of trauma that you're arriving at it with. And someone else, the intrusive thoughts were so real and scary. The anxiety would put me off ever being pregnant again. That's coming up again and again, is that having been sort of blindsided by the anxiety that it would actually put them off trying for another baby. And that's really sad because maybe it is what they want if they felt that there was support there to help them through it.
And can I just speak to that for a minute, Caroline? Because I think that intrusive thoughts are so common. I think we have to remember that they're a kind of, you know, that they're anxious in nature, but they're there to kind of, they're there as a kind of a protection. Okay, they're it's like when the brain kind of gets it wrong, you know, it's, and I think sometimes because they can be so graphic, they can be so terrifying, so scary, you know, sometimes they can even be sexual in nature. So there can be some shame around them. They can be really, really hard for somebody to say out loud, these are the thoughts I'm having, you know, for lots of reasons, for fear that people will think that they are, you know, unfit or that they don't care about their baby or that they're going to hurt their baby in some way. But I want to be really, really clear that, you know, anxious thoughts, intrusive thoughts are not delusional. There's a real difference there, you know, and that they are anxiety, you know, that they are anxious in nature. So they come from a kind of a protective place, a kind of a desire in the parent, and they can happen to men and women to protect the baby, to keep them safe, you know. And there is a lot of ways to support and help people who are experiencing intrusive thoughts. So, you know, I really encourage somebody, if they are in that place, it doesn't mean they're a bad mom. It doesn't mean they're a bad dad. It does not mean for one second, there is no evidence to suggest that they will act on those thoughts. I just want to be really clear about that.
No, it's really, and I had intrusive thoughts, not in pregnancy, but afterwards, and only for having read a book that really helped me understand how, and I didn't seek out the book, but in the book it was talking about how it's actually sort of a necessary part of becoming a mother, where your brain has to throw up these really, you know, terrifying images to get you into that mindset of protection and letting your mind kind of visualize what could go wrong or what could happen to ensure that you make sure it doesn't happen. And that's so jarring because you're all over the place hormonally and you think it's coming from you. Had I not read that, I would have been a lot more worried. And then they did settle down as my own hormones settled down. Someone says PNA was awful, worried about everything, and I couldn't sleep for the first 4 months of pregnancy. CBT helped a lot. Total panic with every new phase. I feel I can't adjust quick enough to the changes. I feel it was driven, someone saying my anxiety in pregnancy was driven due to becoming a first-time mom in COVID times. And that is another, I mean, I think we'll see the effects of that emerge as time goes on. I don't think I really processed how much of I was alone. Like, I remember sobbing my eyes out pregnant, being so sick, and all I wanted was my mom to be here with me. And she lives down in Dingle, and because of the restrictions on the other side of the country, for anyone who doesn't know Dingle, she couldn't be with me. And, you know, and it was just get on with it. This is what the, you know, people are going through worse, deal with it. And then, you know, to have the baby, and then I was alone, as so many women were, giving birth, and I was alone up until I had to push, basically. And that was not normal. And then as soon as I gave birth, an hour later, my husband was sent home. And again, that is not what someone should have to experience. And I, to this day, just say, oh, well, that was just the restrictions at the time. And, you know, you just had to get on with it. And that has to impact your experience.
Of course, so much like social isolation, you know, the loss of control, the lack of control, the normal supports that are in place, just gone.
Yeah. Total health anxiety about something happening to the kids or me. I couldn't shake it. This is all in pregnancy.
Absolutely,
My son was born after we lost his big baby sister. I was riddled with anxiety in pregnancy and after. Like, that's the kind of thing that it would be really, probably you'd really recommend talking to a professional.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And again, it's, you know, just like a normal level of anxiety. I said it is okay, and it is common, and it is part of becoming a new mom or a new dad. But it's like, you know, if you are constantly checking the baby is breathing, for example, you know, you're keeping yourself awake all night, you know, with your hand on the baby's belly to see, you know, are they breathing? Are they not breathing? You know, if you are being kind of jolted awake or constantly, you know, alerted by these kind of these thoughts that something terrible is going to happen to your baby, if you're carrying around a sense of dread, like something really bad is going to happen, you know, that's not okay. And there is help there. And I think, you know, just going back to your listening, you know, when you've gone through a loss, and the pain of that, you know, and then you have a new baby, you know, it's not surprising there's going to be some feelings of anxiety, but it's about sort of, you know, noticing when that has gone to a level that is just unmanageable. You know, it's the constant checking, it's the hypervigilance, it's the flight or fight, it's being, you know, it's being on 100% of the time. That's kind of the way that I would describe it. Yeah. You know, that's nobody has to live like that.
Someone else said, I actually really did experience this, but I only realized it very recently. And having had some spotting in pregnancy made me afraid to do anything. I barely moved or left the house. That's really, really hard to deal with. Another person, the system let me down badly. That breaks my heart.
Yeah. And I think that is really common, Carolyn, because while I say there is a lot of supports out there, you know, like everything in women's health, we are still really catching up. I can only speak to the Irish system, but we really, really are. And, you know, and certainly during the pandemic, I think a lot of perinatal mood and anxiety disorders were missed. And then there's that other thing about, you know, that what is normal, you know, that kind of, well, everybody feels anxious during pregnancy, or everybody feels anxious postpartum. So, you know, people not being able to say, look, this is not this is not right, I'm not feeling good. And I think, sorry, just to go back to what you said a few minutes, Caroline, as well, about, you know, the narrative around motherhood and becoming a new mom and how it should be, I think can really stop people being able to name their real experience. And I think the more conversations we have about it, and you said something really important earlier about, you know, all the focus during pregnancy and birth is on the baby, you know, what size they are, you know, the birthing process, but actually very little is said about the changes that are happening to the mother, you know, and what that feels like, the mother's emotional experience. And we're afraid to talk about it, and we need to talk about it more.
We hear so much about postnatal depression. We hear so little about struggling emotionally, whether it's anxiety or depression beforehand, and not having that awareness is going to make it so much harder for people when they find themselves in that position and they think it's just them, or they think there's something really wrong. There is so many messages of people just saying they just didn't feel the support was there. They didn't feel the support was there. Is it a case, do you think, of having to go looking for it, or is it, should it be presented to everyone as a normal part of it? And hey, this is what you can expect, but look out for this, this, and this. If you feel like it's too much in this direction, give us a call.
Yeah, I think, you know, there definitely needs to be more information given to new moms about the sort of anxiety, mood disorders that they can experience during pregnancy. I think that there isn't enough information given to new moms. And like, to be fair, I think that the health systems are really stretched at the moment. So even, you know, I don't know about you, Caroline, but I remember at my own kind of 12-week appointment, it was sort of a checkbox, so how are you feeling? And you said, oh, I'm feeling fine, you know, and that's sort of it. So I think it comes down to more thorough, you know, assessments being there to really scan for the predetermining risk factors that might lead, you know, somebody down that road of needing support during pregnancy, you know, asking really difficult questions, you know, a really trauma-informed approach. So even, you know, asking questions like, have you ever experienced any trauma? You know, I mean, I work for a national charity providing psychotherapy to survivors of childhood sexual abuse. I mean, that is a huge and significant trauma. And we know that survivors of childhood sexual abuse can be more at risk of developing perinatal mood and anxiety disorders because of the very nature of the trauma that they experienced. But, you know, they're not asked those questions. And there's a number of reasons why. I don't want to get into that, but it's to do with, you know, lack of resources. It's lack of knowledge, you know, that almost healthcare providers, I think, you know, are afraid to ask those really difficult questions for fear of re-traumatizing. You know, it's a bit like what you said earlier. It's about kind of, you know, people want to keep the conversation rosy and positive when it comes to pregnancy. But actually what we do then is we really do a disservice to mothers and birthing people, because we don't give them the kind of information that's going to help them to understand what's happening. And it is a physiological change in your body, but there is also a huge, you know, you know, the brain, the changes that the brain goes through during pregnancy and postpartum, we're still only, you know, tipping the iceberg in terms of what that actually looks like. But we know that just like in adolescence, when the brain is going through a huge transformation, you know, pregnancy and birth is the same. So we need to be giving this as much weight as we are to what's happening physically to our bodies during pregnancy and postpartum. And we're just not quite there yet. So I just really think we need to start having those really honest, really difficult discussions about this, because actually what it does is it minimizes the fear. It doesn't exasperate it.
Oh, Michelle, thank you so much for such an interesting conversation. I really think that a lot of what you've said people can take and apply to their lives right away, whether that's just working on their awareness or their perception of how common this actually can be in the perinatal phase, and crucially, you know, what you can do about it, that they're normalizing it and expecting it as maybe part of it, but actually seeking out help is very much what you recommend if someone feels that it's getting in the way of their life. It's a really important conversation, and there's not enough of them being had, and so I thank you for your wisdom and your expertise. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks so much, Caroline.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
The easiest way to access Owning It Real Time is to head to the link in the episode description or episode details, whatever you call them, show notes. You will find the link in there at the top. You can sign up right away for Owning It Real Time and access the full library of 10 situation-specific audio guides that will help you own your anxiety even more than you've ever done before.